The GPS Dairycast features the high-value insights of the GPS Dairy Consulting Team's trusted advisors and the owners and managers from the elite dairy farms they serve. These conversations deliver on the GPS Dairy Consulting promise to inspire change and grow leaders.
Hello and welcome to the GPS Dairycast. I'm Peggy Coffeen from the Uplevel Dairy Podcast, serving as your host. And on this GPS Dairycast, we are coming to you from the 2023 GPS Leaders Forum. And joining me are Dr. Kimberly Stackhouse Lawson from Colorado State University, as well as GPS Dairy Consultant Andre Pereira. And these two will be discussing sustainability, why there's so much pressure and confusion, not only for consumers, but also for dairy producers, and some of the bigger picture viewpoints and impacts of the sustainability conversations relating right back to the farm level. Enjoy this conversation with Dr. Kimberly Stackhouse Lawson, as well as Andre Pereira.
Hello, Dr. Kim. Thank you for coming. Really appreciate for having you here at Leaders Forum and doing a presentation for us. But we would like to expand a little more on the conversation, and it's great to have this opportunity here. You are at Colorado State University and director of AgNext. Why don't you give us an introduction a little bit about AgNext and what you do there?
Great. Yeah. And thank you for having me. AgNext is a new initiative at Colorado State University that sits between the College of Agricultural Sciences and the College of Vet Med and Biomedical Sciences. And we're a team that focuses on advancing sustainability in the animal agricultural space. So the most exciting thing about AgNext is the incredible group of scientists we've been able to attract to the team. Uniquely, each of those scientists, half of their salary is paid for by the provost through the AgNext budget. And then the other half of their salary, it comes from a partnering department. And so we will eventually hire 12 tenured faculty members to work in this cluster hire. We've hired 6 so far, and those faculty members' partner departments are the animal science, the Department of Ag Resource and Economics, the Ag Experiment Station, and the College of Vet Med Biomedical Sciences. I'm actually partnering with clinical sciences, so through the veterinary school. And in that way, we've been able to build a team that extends from methane experts to epidemiologists to really work on that complex topic of sustainability. Along with that team, we've hired an incredible group also of communicators. And so we have 2 full-time public relations specialists who help us do a better job talking about this complex topic. And so they help us translate science and into things that are more easy to understand, but also stories that people want to listen to and talk about and can relate to. And so in that way, we're really trying to promote sustainability through the animal agriculture space.
I think that's very interesting, mostly with the sustainability part, right? Being sustainable has such a broad understanding throughout different groups in the society, right? So, and there's a lot of pressure and confusion as well. So pressure coming from consumers, pressure coming from creameries, pressure coming from everywhere, but also confusion on what is actually sustainability. So it's good that you have this large group that is focusing on that. But a question I want to ask you is, what are the factors that make it so complex? Why is it so complicated for the general public to understand what sustainability is, and how can we make that more simple?
Yeah, it's a great question. You know, I really think one of the most challenging things about sustainability is that we all think we're experts at it and we all think we own it, right? Because it is such an emotional topic. And so what may be sustainable to you may be very different for me. So if I asked you, what is sustainability for you? Your mind may go somewhere else. And if somebody asked me, like, what is sustainability to Kim Stackhouse? It's actually, for me, it's that the operation I grew up on continues to exist, right? And even though I study sustainability and I truly look at what makes it so complicated, I still have a personal, right, attachment to it. And so I think that emotional element of sustainability is something that's hard to untangle from the science of it. And we see that frequently where emotion can oftentimes override our science. So if we have a recommendation that's based in science, we'll see an emotional decision that might be made in lieu of our science-based information. And sustainability is also multifaceted. So There's the traditional three pillars of economic, social, and environmental. And in true sustainability, those would all be balanced. But those pillars also overlap, right? And they're nuanced. And if you are working on something in one pillar, there's always going to be trade-offs or unintended consequences in another pillar. And then I think when we begin to layer agriculture and food production on top of something that's already complicated, people make decisions about the food that they buy. And some of those may be informed by science, but most of those are emotional, right? Mm-hmm. So I make many food purchasing decisions because my mom made those purchasing decisions, right? And it's what I grew up with. And so agriculture becomes more complicated. We grow food across a variety of different regions and in a variety of different climates and cultures. And then we sell food across that same sort of diverse perspective. And so it's a nuanced and challenging area.
Yeah, it is very interesting. I thought it was very interesting a comment you made today about how we don't choose where the source of electricity comes to our house when we turn the plug up. But when we go to the grocery store, we can actually choose what food we will buy, right? And with all the options we have. So I thought that was a fantastic comment.
Yeah, the example that I use in the energy sector is because the energy sector always wants to say that they have it the worst. and their job is hard. Sustainability is hard everywhere. But I always remind my energy friends that when we turn on the lights in our homes or in our offices, we don't choose the source of the electricity, right? We don't choose whether it's solar or another renewable form, or if it's coal-fired, for example. The municipality chooses that. And it's sort of outside of even our thought process. We're mostly just annoyed if the lights don't turn on, right? We're not even happy that they do. Yep. But in food, that's different, right? Food purchasers make a decision at least weekly and sometimes more often. And so it's certainly an added challenge when it comes to agriculture.
Yeah. And on that, so on the food companies, what are the companies out there that are mostly influencing these decisions and these policy decisions that are coming up down the pipeline?
Yeah. So I think when we think about food companies and policy, right now they're more separate, right? So I think from a policy/government perspective, they're really approaching sustainability more through the lens of that environmental pillar and hyper-focused on greenhouse gas mitigation and really thinking in the U.S. about methane mitigation when it comes to agriculture and also carbon sequestration or reduction opportunities. On the company side, you know, they've been working in sustainability for so long and truly across all three pillars, right? And oftentimes when you look at those corporate sustainability reports, the data collection is actually the deepest in the social pillar around people. And that's actually where sustainability in the corporate space began. It began on the people side. And sustainability for corporations and companies is really about risk mitigation. And that's really fun to do for a company. But greenhouse gases have really evolved since 2017, 2018, when companies really started to begin to report and measure those and have that pressure that would come from predominantly ESG investment and sustainable finance and also image, right? Company image. So what does a boardroom expect? Why would somebody invest in a good company, right? People, those same emotional components that a consumer makes around food selection, people are making around investing in companies too, or working for companies. Strong corporate sustainability programs oftentimes correlate to reduced turnover in a company as well. And so there's lots of really good business elements of sustainability. And that has not gone away, right? Even though we see hyper-focus in the climate space, and that's converging with what we see from a government policy perspective. And so it feels oftentimes like all we do is talk about greenhouse gases and climate. If you go look at those corporate reports, they are as robust in that social and economic pillar as they are in the environmental pillar. And there's good reason for that, right? Those companies are really trying to think about that nexus and the system and try and understand those unintended consequences and quantify it. And it's a developing space. We're not good at quantifying all of that all of the time, but we're certainly getting better at it.
It's very interesting. So you talked about ESG. Can you just expand on what this ESG is and how much money is there?
Yeah. So ESG stands for Environmental, Social, and Governance. And it's an opportunity for large hedge funds, essentially, to invest in companies, and I'm going to use air quotes here, kind of for good, right? So it's an investment in companies that are demonstrating progressive approaches related to the environment, social aspects, and then their governance. And so it's really been a unique evolution from a company perspective. And so it really started with just transparently reporting to a set of standards. And those standards, there's many of them. And there's a couple that are most commonly used. So the Global Reporting Initiative is a very common one. The Carbon Disclosure Program is another common one. SASB, the Sustainable Accounting Standards Board, is another common one. And then TCFD is another common one, the Task Force on Climate-Related Disclosures, I believe is TCF. Yeah, Task Force on Climate-Related Financial Disclosures, I think is the acronym. And so ESG really started from a company perspective. There were large investing corporations that were looking for companies to invest in that were good, that were profitable, but also good companies, like kind of using their scale and size for good. And so these reporting initiatives developed standards, and then the first sort of wave of that was just transparently reporting that on your website, right? And that's good. It's great, right? And one of the best ways to hold yourself accountable is to measure. But another really good way to hold yourself accountable, because others will hold you accountable, is to publicly report that. And so it really started as just reporting that on a website, which opened companies up for significant criticism as well. And so those reporting initiatives have continued to evolve and mature and are robust now. And we're beginning to see ESG investment where it's you have to do more than just publicly report. You actually have to demonstrate progress over time. And that was always the intent of the investors, right? But they'll basically say, you know, here we have these ESG criteria. If you meet those criteria, we will invest these dollars in your company. So it's a way to kind of unlock that investment.
If you're enjoying this podcast and you want to learn more about GPS Dairy Consulting, make sure to join our email list. Our announcements aren't just for GPS clients, but instead for anyone looking to advance their dairy business. Learn more about GPS and take a deeper dive into dairy farming hot topics. Stay in the loop with our once weekly emails and have all GPS Dairycast podcasts, blog posts, event announcements, and monthly newsletters sent straight to your inbox. You can join the GPS email list by clicking the link in the show notes.
We're focusing on dairy production here, right? And dairy producers. And one of the topics you talked about at the presentation that is very interesting too is how the government is working on mitigating methane emissions. How does these policies and these pressures work towards the dairy farming?
Great question. So in the sustainability space, it has evolved from in the 2015-2016 era of really being very company focused. So it would have been a corporate sustainability report on what you can control, right? So it would be kind of within the company's own walls. So if it's a creamery, it's really just the processing facility, right? As sustainability has evolved, so has the expectations. And so there are expectations today whereby that company has, the expectation is that the company, the creamery, would have influence on their supply chain. And it's a way to encourage change. And change is hard, right? Because change, there becomes all these questions around change, around like, is change needed? Is change bad? Are we changing because we were bad? Are we changing for good, right? And I don't think that was ever, I mean, I don't know the intent, but it's hard to say what the intent was of kind of going into the supply chain. But there's certainly those expectations today. And so we describe that in the greenhouse gas space as scope 1, scope 2, and scope 3. But it really applies to every single indicator that is sustainability. And expectations for data transparency and traceability are here today, all the way through the supply chain. And so I'm sure dairy farmers have felt increased surveys, right, around asking them questions related to how they're conducting their operations, right? And so when we think about scope one, that's just what you control, what you own in your own operations. Scope two is sort of more supply chain oriented, but it's closer to you, right? It's like within a region. Scope three is outside of your scope. And it's very clear in greenhouse gases, what's included and not included. But companies are beginning and have for 4 or 5 years now, ask those same sort of questions about suppliers. So labor is actually a really good example. And it's been one that has been supply chain specific for the longest, where companies will have audits around where's your labor coming from and what regulatory processes do you have in place to ensure that that labor is legal and you're following all of the laws and regulations associated with that labor. And for example, in many sustainability programs, that will extend all the way to feed suppliers, right? Or fertilizer suppliers. And most of that's region dependent. So if you're in a region of the world, that would be, you know, something to be concerned about. But that's really where it stems from. And so
there has been a lot of talk lately on where is the source of your palm fat, for example,
yes, that comes exactly.
from Asia. So
right. So that's that. Yeah. So that's a sustainability program, right? That a company has, and then they're going to be asking you exactly that.
So you think farmers just have to keep better records, or they're going to be asked to keep better records about everything?
I think data will be power. Data will be key. And somehow we have to make data, and it's very close, right? Making data less costly and less challenging to send up and down the supply chain, right? But a true focus on data collection and AI and using AI in a way to help answer some of these questions, I think will be part of the future. I think it will be an expectation. And, you know, I think the good thing about that as an expectation is the storytelling and the public relations and the trust that hopefully we can build as a supply chain with that data, right? So I think the immediate reaction is, oh my gosh, that's going to be expensive to collect. It's going to be hard to collect. I don't have it. I don't have time to do this, right? Like, how am I going to do this? Yeah. And those are all fair. I mean, I collect data for a living. Those are fair responses. But hopefully we can transition that to, okay, we have to collect this data. And I do think, unfortunately, it will be a have to, right? It's going to be a mandate from any of these supply chains and turn it into, we're an industry you can trust, and here are our proof points, right? Because we know today that proof points are expected, right? So radical transparency is coming.
Yep. So those are great. But here at Leaders Forum, we have most of the progressive dairies in the Midwest that are attending, and they've had a lot of questions. And I just wanted to follow up on those questions and take a quick look at them. So one of the questions that comes up a lot that I've heard it from clients as well is, here's the question. How do you expect dairies to invest millions of dollars into a process that doesn't have clear expectation, goals, rules, and it's so murky, right? You can't see what's going on. It's a lot of money.
It is a lot of money. And unfortunately today, I don't have a solution for them to invest in, right? So that's something that keeps me up at night is the lack of dollars for knowledge creation and research. And so, you know, we saw the Climate Smart Commodities Partnership that invested billions in the adoption of climate smart practices across agriculture. And in animal agriculture, for example, you know, there's been less than $5 million invested in the last 10 years from USDA looking at the mitigation of methane, which is our predominant greenhouse gas emission, right? And so I don't, to be clear, expect them to invest millions. What I hope is that they can help policymakers and food companies understand that they are unclear on what to do, right? I don't have anything that I can tell them to do today except for to keep doing what you have been doing because you've made remarkable progress. But to meet this new expectation, we're clearly going to have to do more. And that clearly going to have to do more is going to have to win in multiple sustainability pillars, right? It can't just be an environmental win. It has to be, hopefully, it's a win in the other two pillars, but at a minimum, it's got to maintain those other two pillars, right? And we still have a lot to discover. So I think being really authentic and open about what our challenges are and coming to the table with a specific ask is important. And producers are the very best to do that, right? So if the ask is, I'm not willing to invest millions in something that I don't know, then come to the table with, here's what I need to know before I'm willing to make an investment, right? Like come with a solution, maybe not the solution by which you're going to adopt, but the help people understand what you need to know to do those things.
There's a lot of methane emissions that are coming from dairy farms, right? And people are complaining about how can we reduce those? We know enteric emissions are very hard to reduce. Reduce enteric emissions, we pretty much reduce profitability. And we just have to reduce milk production or beef production, right, to do that. So we know that most of these emissions come from greenhouse gases in dairy farming. But where can a farm actually right now say, okay, I'm going to act to try to reduce my greenhouse gases without actually reducing my profitability?
Mm-hmm.
What do you think there?
Mm-hmm. Great question. So I think, right, when we look backwards into time, we have continued to reduce the footprint of milk. So even if greenhouse gas emissions have gone up, we're producing more milk. And that footprint of milk is certainly going down, right, from a resource use efficiency perspective. And so the things that we do from an efficiency aspect on the dairy farm related to the cow are exceptionally important. Reproduction efficiency, feed efficiency, mortality, morbidity, right? Getting those sorts of very animal management focused aspects of the farm dialed in right are absolutely critical. Another thing that is going to happen with the adoption of more digesters is that the emissions from lagoons and manure management will go away, right? So there is going to be a reduction of greenhouse gases that are going to come just from capping for lack of a better word, right? That open anaerobic digester, right? So that will certainly help. Other things, you know, thinking about diet efficiency, thinking about diet in an important way, right? Making sure that the animal from a nutritional micro and macro nutrient standpoint is as energetically as efficient as possible is really important because there's also a footprint that comes from feed production, right? So that if we can reduce that, that's really important. Thinking about appropriate fertilizer application on the cropping side of the business is very important. So are we truly optimizing the nutrients that the crop needs from a land perspective? Because there's quite a bit of nitrous oxide emissions that are coming from cropping production systems, right? So there are things we can do now that we have been doing, but there's new innovations related to efficiency, right? But it's all around that nutrient efficiency standpoint. And of course, there's new market opportunities that will come. There's going to be methane modifiers that will hit the market that we can test. And if there's economic incentives to implement those, hopefully the research will catch up and up that we'll feel confident in that methane and profitability question and ultimately methane and milk production and methane and reproduction efficiency and methane and all of the other health aspects of the dairy cow that we care about. You know, our team is actually really excited about what's the greenhouse gas savings in just identifying what a healthy cow is, right? So we often in the research space think about what's a sick cow, but how do we turn that around and think about what's a healthy cow and how do we manage for that healthy cow and how do we help her from a longevity perspective? I'm also really excited on beef on dairy and sort of added speed at which we might improve genetics in the dairy herd because of beef on dairy. So as that cow or as that calf is worth more when he is born, will we see cow longevity increase? And then will we see stronger genetic selection for the highest producing cows on the dairy farm and doing more kind of ET transfer and thinking about genetics kind of differently? So I'm excited about that element of dairy and how that could be a climate smart solution. So, you know, I think we get very myopic and focused on, oh my gosh, I'm just going to have to feed another additive. And maybe. But I think if we do a good job and we're thoughtful and we come together and think about it in a systems perspective and we have dollars to actually conduct research, not just on additives, but on management decisions, like there might be multiple wins that come out of this new age of sustainability.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of focus on this methane part, but you're right. There are a lot of other bottlenecks that can be worked on way before we even start talking about an additive to improve the cows.
And they may be more impactful.
It could be.
We need to really focus on getting those models right, making sure our prediction equations are right, making sure we have a menu of options producers get to choose from that work for them, and then make sure whatever we're predicting on that farm as a reduction is accurate, right? And then let's let this producer do what they do best, which is manage their own operation and more or less say thank you at the end, right?
Yep. And it brings me to a question they had is one asked, is there an incentive to start doing this earlier rather than later, or waiting until 2030, 2040 when these companies are gonna bring those goals into action? Is there an incentive to do it earlier rather than later? I think you just answered the question. There's always an incentive to be more efficient and to have less waste in your farm and actually waste less money and improve your genetics, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think there's incredible incentive to be at the table, because this is being defined oftentimes without many producers in the room. And I think that that element of bringing that expertise into boardrooms and corporations where these decisions are being made and being respectful, right? I mean, you don't want to come in there very mad or very upset, but also very clear in what's possible and what you can do and what you need help with, mm-hmm. right? So I think there's huge incentives just to help shape the narrative and the conversation.
I have a question for you on that and on going forward, moving forward, and a tricky one, but I don't like to separate people into generations, right? Mm-hmm. We all talk about boomers, millennials, etc. But what do you think this next generation that's coming up, the younger generation, will want to see as a sustainable future for them?
Well, that's a great question. I work with them daily, which is very interesting as a professor, that the next generation are my graduate students and undergraduate students and others. And the good ones are, which we have, right? I think when you get to graduate school or you're selected as a undergraduate intern in a research program, I mean, they're the top tier. They're predominantly women. Our entire student team, there's 20 of them, and we only have two men. They're predominantly women. They care deeply. They're tough, really tough. They have great emotional IQ. And I don't know if it's because they've grown up with social media their whole life. And so for them, separating the truth from non-truth is very quick. And they make it more as a gut reaction rather than a knowledge of science, which is very interesting. But most of the time, they're accurate. And so I've been wildly impressed with the top tier. Hard workers. Diligent, very mindful, and again, just incredible emotional intelligence. So I think we've got great leaders that will come up and will help shape this, and frankly, will be critical to our success.
That's great to hear. I've been seeing similar things with farm transitions that I've been seeing in the past few years. So yeah, it's exciting. It's very exciting, actually, for the future. It's very interesting to hear and talk about this sustainability topic, right? Because we, as dairy nutritionists, we do that on a daily basis. My graduate work, when I did my doctorate, was on nitrogen and methane emissions and how to reduce those, how to actually make them more efficient. And it's something we constantly work on is efficiency of nutrients that we put in a diet. How can we utilize more of those nutrients within the cow so she can be more productive, right? And we're constantly working on that. There are several feed additives that some promise some a lot of things, some just are more realistic as well in saying this is what it does and that's it. And we also have to balance those feed additives and know okay, what can we use in this specific case for this specific scenario in this farm that is going to increase the efficiency? It's a very important topic, not only for dairy farmers, but also for nutritionists and for farmers and nutritionists to have that conversation revolving, what are you doing to increase my efficiency and try to reduce, for me to be more sustainable? I mean, farmers are stewards of the land. We know that. And they want that. Every farmer I know wants that land to be pristine for their next generation. That's one of the most important things for them. So in our perspective as nutritionists, it's a very important topic. We try to steer away from the politicized topics, right, on and things that can be polarizing, or commentaries that can be polarizing. We try to steer away from that. But as a nutritionist, our focus is let's try to make this more efficient. Let's try to make your farm more efficient. And the consultant side of us as well is also working on, let's reduce mortality, let's improve our reproduction efficiency, let's try to optimize our reproduction methods here, so we can do, for example, beef on dairy on the cows that are not going to be the future of this herd, and focus more on the future of the herd. How can we accelerate the genetics that is coming into the farm right now with better genetics? So there are things that us nutrition consultants, we focus a lot on that as well, but basically because I also want to see that land to be there for their next generation, right? So that's what we. Dr. Kim, thank you so much for being with us today. We really appreciate your presence. We appreciate your knowledge. Great presentations at the Leaders Forum, and it was awesome to have a conversation with you. Really appreciate it. Yeah, thank you so much, and hope to see you around, and I hope this topic will just keep popping up.
Awesome. Thank you. Thank you for having me.
You just heard from Dr. Kimberly Stackhouse Lawson from Colorado State University, along with GPS dairy consultant Andre Pereira, on this topic of sustainability. This was covered at the 2023 GPS Leaders Forum in a conversation called Sustainability: Why Is There So Much Pressure and Confusion? And the two of these folks have answered these questions for us today. Thank you for joining us on this GPS Dairycast. I'm your GPS Dairycast host, Peggy Coffeen, from the Uplevel Dairy Podcast, and thank you for listening.
The GPS Dairycast features conversations that deliver on the GPS Dairy Consulting promise to inspire change and grow leaders. If this GPS Dairycast has you looking for more ways to become an elite dairy producer, find more information in our show notes on how you can add a GPS advisor to your team.